Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Okay, so what are the positives and negatives when it comes to Drew Lock, the guy that everyone seems to still have attached to the Denver Broncos for whatever reason? And this segment is sponsored by Monster Vac. But here we are yet again talking about Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos. Troy Rank and Cecil Lammy sitting in for the fellas today. And it's because of this Gilbrandt article. It's because of the Gilbrandt article where he highlighted the fits for these quarterbacks coming in this draft class and the best fit, the best teams out there. Kyler Murray, Arizona Cardinals. Makes sense. Make it happen. He has Daniel Jones, New England Patriots as the best fit. It's interesting. We'll see. And then there is again Drew Lock with the Denver Broncos. I know Flacco answered the question. I believe it was your question, right, Troy? About if they took a quarterback at 10, but to me it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make sense if it's Drew Lock.
Again, Lock has the size Elway likes, 6'4", 230, fits the blueprint, but the quarterback he seems to like, and you and I talked about this, that he liked the most this offseason was Joe Flacco. And if they really were thinking about a succession plan, I don't think they go out and get Joe Flacco. Every move, like, that's what I try to tell people. Like, should I did an article on Denver 7 last week, like the case for taking a quarterback at 10, because you can make a very sound argument that even with all their needs, if at 10, because you're not there a lot, especially if you're the Broncos, that if you like one of these guys, you should take him, because Flacco, you're dating, not married to, he's essentially on a 1-year deal, not unlike Keenum. And then if it doesn't go right, the fans and the whole way you see the prism in which you see the team, Cecil, is, we got hope. The most popular guy in town is the backup quarterback, especially if he's young. Like, man, we got something here. We're 7-9, but we got this young kid. He got a redshirt year, and now here we go. But their posture this offseason hasn't been that. It's been get back to the playoffs. So how does taking a quarterback at 10, as even Joe Flacco brought up, kind of how does that make us better this year? Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. But in the case of Drew Lock, you argue that he had a weird career at Missouri. You know, there's kind of coaching, a lot of drama there, that protests, and he was a captain. I mean, but on the field, he's very talented. You know, he's got some of the skills you want to see. My issue with Lock was anytime I saw him play a good team in the SEC, he really struggled. I mean, with multiple picks, and I get he's forcing it, he's trying to make plays, but I just didn't watch him and say, that's going to be a guy who's going to have a really good NFL career. I saw a guy, that's an NFL quarterback. But I didn't watch him and go, Cecil, man, if he's at 10, I got to take him. But I'll ask you, I'll throw it back to you, Cecil. You're at the Senior Bowl. Is that the genesis and the kind of the origin of where this love nationally is for why people think the Broncos are going to take Drew Lock? And not that it won't happen, but it just seems like nationally – there's this feeling like if he's on the board, it's a no-brainer. And I haven't sensed that here from my sources locally.
Yeah, and it's because John Elway barely left the quarterback part of the drills. Like, you see John Elway front and center. He's down there on the field. A lot of GMs will hide in the press box for good reason. They badge anyone in Mobile. So, you know, there's a lot of fanboys running around with a badge. But John Elway was front and center, watching quarterbacks, making it very clear to this team, the traveling to see Drew Lock play in college. With Drew Lock, like, great guy, hard worker, great parents, and kind of has that good, solid foundation. So you're not worried about work ethic. I always put Drew Lock like this. Imagine if Jay Cutler, like, had a little better focus, right? So you see the talent, you see the arm, that's natural. Mechanics are off. Mechanics need a lot of work there with Drew Lock, and there's just some mind-numbing decisions that he makes when he's trying to force a play, and his arm release point changes for no apparent reason. So there, it's definitely a project here. And when you look at the Denver Broncos, it's like, okay, and I said this yesterday, everyone needs to take it, repeat it. Don't give me credit, give me credit. I don't care, because this is the exact way to look at these quarterbacks. Taking a quarterback at 10 is like taking a quarterback in the 20s, which, if you listen to D-Mac, and D-Mac is right, don't ever take a quarterback in the 20s. I know Aaron Rodgers, right? That's where these guys would grade in a quote-unquote normal draft. The only reason we're talking about Kyler Murray at 1, Kyler Murray is not the best player in this draft. The only reason we're talking about him at one is because of Arizona. If he doesn't go at one, he might fall all the way to, you know, 13, whatever. And it's quarterback desperation. Next year's class has legit quarterbacks in it. Last year's class had legit quarterbacks in it. These guys, I would rank them around Lamar Jackson. Drew Lock would be around 30 in a normal board, in a normal class. So for everyone out there, get Drew Lock and quarterback of the future. It would be like taking a quarterback in the 20s, which you know can be kryptonite for a team.
Well, I'll ask you this then, because we know Justin Herbert and Tua, we're going to, you know, they may go 1-2 in the draft, depending on these.
Jake Fromm will go 3.
But that's my question is, where do you grade Jake Fromm in relation to Drew Lock, Dwayne Haskins?
Well above.
Well above, okay.
Well above. Now, he has to continue to do it, because a year ago, I was talking about Jarrett Stidham. Hey, keep an eye on him. Maybe he's a first-rounder. He's a second-rounder now. Because at Auburn in his final year, he didn't take those next steps, especially against the good teams.
Right, he didn't play well
early.
Which
is always the thing to look for when you're watching college football, and all we can take away is arm talent. Watch him against the really good teams.
With pro-type corners, like guys you're going to play in the league.
Yep.
Exactly. Because you play against La Tech, and they give 10-yard cushions. Okay, yeah, he looks great. He's thrown into space, and he's got better players. But what do they look like when they play Alabama, and their cornerbacks are going to the league?
Right.
What do they look like when they go against Greedy Williams and LSU? Yeah, that's what I want to see. From last year to me, I thought I'd see a little more upside to him, and I thought he kind of plateaued a little bit. And I love his talent, but I don't know where I want to see where Fromm ends up in relation to a Lock and a Haskins after this next year when he's eligible. Because Tua and Herbert, barring injury, they're going to go in the top two, maybe even, you know, top five at the worst. But where is that third quarterback? And that's because if the Broncos go 8-8, Cecil,
that's the conversation
we're
having. That's
the worst possible scenario for them, because then you're at like 18, 19, 20 in the draft. So are you going to give up a second rounder and then the following year's first rounder to trade up to like 7 or 6 to get Jake Fromm?
Mm-hmm.
That's where, again, the question of how much do you like a Lock or Haskins? If you start projecting out to the future of, man, we're going to be a 500 team next year, how the heck are we going to get in the top 10 without mortgaging our draft? So that's why I ask you what you think, how Fromm compares to a Haskins or Lock.
So far, what are the differences we've seen between Flacco and what we saw last year at this time from Case Keenum? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion. Even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Ideal Home Loans.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, Joe Flacco has been refreshing out there. And full disclosure, Troy Rank, Cecil Lammy filling in for the fellas today on a beautiful Friday here. I've never been a huge Joe Flacco fan. He was a little gritchy to me at the Senior Bowl years ago. And, well, I hold grudges, Troy. I don't know if you know that about me. But I like what I've seen from Joe Flacco. I like when I've been able to talk to Joe Flacco with the Denver Broncos. Like, this seems like a new man. Can he still play? We'll see. But what have the differences been for you between Case Keenum, what we saw last year, and Joe Flacco, and what we've seen this year?
Well, it's a reflection of their resume. We'll start there. You know, I've said that there was a danger when you got Keenum that he was going to be the greatest one-year wonder since the Macarena. Because his year with the Vikings was an aberration when you looked at the back of his baseball card, as we say, or the back of his football card. And I'm like, man, 3-1 touchdown interception ratio. If he gets 2-1 with the Broncos, they have a chance. And he was awful here. And he didn't process the way. But what is the difference, even like this time of year? Case brought stability. Like Emmanuel Sanders, like, we finally know who our quarterback was. And that was needed because the circus of American Idol auditions and who's going to be the guy, that just drains the energy of a team. And Case brought stability. The problem with Case, for me, it just felt like he was playing the role of a quarterback in a movie.
Right.
Like, you cast him to say, hey, there's our quarterback, and he's playing the role. And that's probably disrespectful to him. But the reality, that's where it felt like I'm the Broncos quarterback. I must talk this way. And say cliches and say, you know, try to be, when I don't play bad, point the finger on me and be the lead. Like, it just felt like he was following and like, step by step, connect the dots painting. Like, this is what I say here. This is what I do here. End of the day, he didn't play well enough. The difference of Joe Flacco, to your question, if you walked out to Broncos practice and you watched what we were watching, like them warming up, you would turn as a sports fan. Let's say you're not a huge, you'd be like, who's number five? It's like when you go to a field and you see a kid on a basketball court, you go, mm-hmm. Hey, who's 22?
Who's that kid?
Who is that kid? Like, you immediately notice him, his presence. And he just has a demeanor like, dude, I've done this. This is my 12th year doing this. Like, I didn't show up in the cockpit of the race car yesterday. I've been on the track a while. And that, you can see that from him. Like, Case was, like, barking out the signals, and he was leading, so he was doing it the right way, but it felt like he was doing it the right way because, like, someone's telling you how to act. Like, hey, you need to be a cheerleader. Okay, then I got that. Then it just, like, it was just never felt, for me, watching it, natural. And part of that because they didn't win. You know, if they started winning, I'm sure his leadership would have looked natural. With Flacco, you can see guys just kind of gravitate, and he made a couple throws out there, and it's April, and people are like, ooh, man, that's, we haven't seen that in a while.
Right.
And it, you know, and players, and now people roll their eyes at this. Players know resumes. And the one thing I've learned from the NFL is if they think they can win with you, they will have confidence in you. They gave Case the benefit of the doubt early, and then he was getting booed, and he was struggling, and there was an underlying doubt in the locker room. Not against him personally, but just like, this guy might be the guy who was
doesn't look right.
This might be the guy who was with the Rams. With Flacco, that Super Bowl resume for them, that carries weight. That gives you cachet in the locker room. Now, we'll see where you are at the end of September. But he will get more of a benefit of the doubt because he's done it, Cecil. So what have I noticed? Like, he's the guy. Like, there's no doubt when you walk out there, like, oh, who's five? Okay, yeah, I get that. Like, I see why. But can he still play? That's the part I don't know. He's the oldest guy on the roster by almost a couple years. He hasn't had a really big statistical year since 2014. Hasn't won a playoff game since then. So all this stuff on his resume, while glittery, hasn't happened in a while.
I actually want to see if he can stay healthy. Now, can he still play? That's a good question. That's the right question. But I want to preface this by saying, if you go back last year and remember going into that Broncos game, they were 100% in the red zone. They were 100% in the red zone. Like, they got there, they were scoring. And that was Joe Flacco leading the way. So I know overall the numbers weren't great, and they've never really been. Year with Gary Kubiak,
he's not a fantasy league
27
guy.
Touchdowns, right?
Right. That was his high.
That's what you're going to get with Flacco. You get like 22 passing touchdowns. How efficient can he be, and can he stay healthy? Because the back bothered him all of the 2017 season, and then 2018 the hip. But before the hip knocked him out, the hip was bothering him. So that affected his play, in my opinion. Early that Joe Flacco looked good last year.
He was still playing pretty well early. He played well. I mean, I saw him live against the Broncos last year. He played well. I mean, they beat the Broncos by throwing the football last year, where teams after that, you know, were crushing the Broncos on the ground. The Ravens that day really had no running attack. Their tight ends were a huge factor. Flacco was very accurate. They were spreading it out, and, you know, he played well that game when I saw him live. They do need the tight end to be part of this plan, though. And when he, 2 years in 17, he's had the second most targets, completions to tight ends. When he's right, he's got that guy, that underneath route, that drag route. And so they need to figure that out.
Gene, at number 10, they could be in prime position to get one of these quality tight ends. Maybe a TJ Hockenson. We're going to get to that. Let's save that. We'll save that for a little bit later as to what would be best for the Broncos at 10 with all this defensive talent, or do they go with a tight end? That's coming up, and we'll do that at 8 o'clock. But with Flacco, and a different Flacco now, but do you know why he got gritchy with me at the Senior Bowl? Do you know why? Have you heard the story?
I have not heard the story.
I asked him something I think is a legitimate question. I want the answer, because he didn't really answer me. He got mad, because I was there with the camera crew, and I was like, hey, you don't feel pressure. Like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And I think it's a very good thing. Like, they call him Cool Joe. Like, watch him. Like, his demeanor is very calm on the field. He's not that big rah-rah guy. And if there's chaos swirling around him, he doesn't really care. So I was, you know, it's kind of a softball question a little bit. But I thought it would be very insightful to hear how he processes the pressure around him, because he doesn't feel pressure. People might say that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. He took offense to that question, but like, watch Joe Flacco on the field. We're watching him in shorts. You know, we're watching him in warmups, and it looks good. Watch him under pressure. The guy doesn't feel a thing. And I think that's a good thing, Troy. Do you?
Well, you can watch it on NFL films. Go to YouTube. Like, he's calm as a lagoon. Super Bowl, big games.
Do you write these at night? I've always thought that. When I hear you talk about the Macarena and all this stuff, I was like, do you sit there and like, what's really calm? What's a calm?
No, most of them come organically. And then there's some I use over because I like that rather than change them. But in the case of Flacco,
he's calm as a lagoon. I like that.
You don't see. Remember when they beat the Broncos, to bring up a bad memory, when that day they're in the huddle, did he look like a guy that was panicking? Was there a sense of... Now, when you're losing, like when I talk to Ravens fans, sometimes his lack of outward enthusiasm comes across as lack of urgency.
You're right, right.
Like, why isn't he panicking? Why isn't he mad? Well, again, you can't ask a guy to be the calming force. Like Joe Torre is a manager of the Yankees. The bigger the crisis, the calmer he got. He didn't be like, oh, George Steinbrenner's coming down to fire. I got to go. No, it was like he took the blame. He deflected everything. And that's who Joe Flacco is. The bigger the moment, he's in the huddle like, hey, I think we're going to go over here. We're going to go over to the right here. We're going to throw this ball. But you can't then expect him when things are bad to be rah-rah. That's when things go. That's when teammates are like, wait, when things are going well, he was really calm. Now we're not doing it. He's got his hair on fire. Joe Flacco is who he is. And that's what I like about Joe Flacco is that the personality part. Being calm in an NFL game is not a bad trait. I mean, you look in the huddle and your quarterback looks like his eyes are bugging out and his hair's on fire and he just redlined some Red Bull. You're like, yay, simmer down here, boy. I mean, you got to call the plays, man. Like, calm down. And Flacco, that's not the issue. Again, it's an issue with me is at 34, what's left? What's left? Can he still be a productive player in this league? And I think if they play great defense, and that's the script for him. Play great defense, take care of the ball, 22 touchdowns, 12 picks. That's who it looks like to me they want him to be. Game manager Joe Flacco takes care of the ball and leads the team. It doesn't look like they're going to ask him to do something he's not capable of, Cecil. So in that sense, hey, this could work. We'll see.
We shall see, and we'll see about Flacco's leadership as well. Something that, Vic Fangio had to comment on. We'll get to it in Four Down Territory next.
And he's loose!
This is Four Down Territory.
Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here.
We're on to Cincinnati.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
Do you want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the out of here.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
Just go out there and be himself. You know, he's got a lot of talent. He always has. He's a really good player. His production over the years proves that. And we think he's got a lot of ball left in him, and we're going to get that from him here.
A lot of ball left in him. Okay, that's a saying he's in his prime, right? There's Vic Fangio talking about Joe Flacco and his leadership. What have you picked up on? Troy Rank, Cecil Lammy sitting in for the fellas today. What have you picked up on from Joe Flacco in terms of watching him as a leader so far in minicamp?
He's his own man. His resume does definitely resonates in that locker room. You can see the respect he's shown. He's going to be given the benefit of the doubt because of what he's done in this league. You know, 11 years in the league. Basically, he started 16 games, 9 of those 11 seasons. He's durable. He has a Super Bowl ring. He's won big playoff games. He's won big playoff road games, not just in Denver. But I've seen that. There's no question he demands respect without saying a word. That's a great attribute for your quarterback, Cecil. The issue is, at 34, it strains credibility, you know, to say he's in his prime based on the previous seasons. It doesn't mean that this can't happen at 34. Because we've seen it with Breeze. We've seen it with Rivers. We've seen it with Brady. We've seen, you know, but he's really not mentioning those are the elite. Like, those are Hall of Famers. So that's where are we with Joe Flacco? Is it he is still climbing and he's in a perfect situation? He's got an edge. He's motivated. He's mad. It didn't end the way he wanted in Baltimore, where he should have retired, you know, the hero, a legend. So But he's definitely the guy in charge. There's no question anymore. Like, Keenum was by title. It was like, hey, we make you the boss, you're the boss. If Joe Flacco walked in there today, you know he was, within an hour, he'd be the guy on the playground quarterback, and the rest would be falling in line.
Next on Four Down Territory.
Second down.
Flock wants to throw, pressure up the middle, steps up, fires, got a man open, deep middle, caught, touchdown, Cam Scott. Cam Scott with his second touchdown reception of the season.
There's some Drew Lock highlights, thanks to Mizzou Radio, and Gil Brandt from NFL.com, godfather of the scouting community, just has forgotten more about football than most people know. Gil Brandt matched up the quarterbacks in this draft with the teams that would be the best fit. He picks the Denver Broncos best fit with Drew Lock. So here we go again, Troy. National perspective is that the Broncos and Drew Lock would be a nice fit.
Well, again, the genesis of that is John Elway saw him in Columbia. He went to his game in college, so there's clear interest. And at the Senior Bowl where you were, Cecil, he's keeping a close eye on Drew Lock there. For me, it's overstated their interest in Lock, that if Haskins were there at 10, I think they would pause and think long and hard of, you know, can we walk away from this draft not getting a quarterback if Haskins is on the board at 10? I don't, based on sources, and this is the Lions season, so you have to understand that, but I don't think they would take Lock if he's available at 10. Their posture this offseason has been to win, to get back to the playoffs, and to get back to the playoffs, if you take a player at 10 who's not going to play, I don't know how that helps you this season. You could argue they should take a quarterback, but them taking Lock does not, I don't see that right now. Most people have Lock, even in this draft, from what, 20 to 30, if you took the best player available. He's not in the top 10 that I've seen on anybody's top, no. Just if you rated him as players, not fit, not need.
Right.
He's not a top 10 player. And if he had come out last year, according to you, Cecil, and others I trust, he probably would have been ahead of only Lamar Jackson.
Right. That's
so
correct.
That would have put him in the late 20s. So if that's the true valuation of him, would you take him at 10, a guy that a year before would have been available at 24, 25? What did you just do with that? That was Paxton Lynch. Taking a quarterback in the 20s to me is worthless. Either you take him in the top 10 because he's that guy, or you wait. Because to take a guy at 10 who's really in the 20s, that's a reach, and you end up regretting it.
Next in four down territory.
Down. Rosen throws to the left side to Kirk. Caught at the 40. Breaks a tackle. 45, 50. Shot out of a cannon at the 40, at the 30, at the 20. 10, 5, touchdown.
An actual Josh Rosen highlight. Or very rare last year. Josh Rosen has spoken. Talked about how it was kind of annoying what's going on right now. Said that he's got to prove the Cardinals right if they keep him. Prove him wrong if they get rid of him. More tough talk from Josh Rosen.
Listen, I've heard good things about Rosen. He does work hard. He's early in the building. He cares. The one concern I've heard from him that people are kind of on the inside last year was he didn't process information on the field as fast as they thought he would, as quickly as they thought he would. Because in college, he had the pro-style offense. He looked the part, drop-back guy, threw a good ball. And he looked like the most pro-ready to me of some of those quarterbacks last year. There were issues about the personality. He grew up playing tennis. He grew up playing an individual sport. So sometimes how does he fit in the team dynamic, which I do think at times he struggles with. I don't think he's a bad guy. Very bright. But I do think having grown up playing an individual sport and being really good at it, there are times it feels like he struggles with the team dynamic and how chemistry works. But the reality is he didn't play well last year. And Cliff Kingsbury, if he's going to succeed in the NFL, it makes a lot of sense to get a quarterback that fits his offense. And they may crash and burn. It might be the worst mistake ever to take Murray at one, but the second biggest mistake would be Kingsbury trying to win when nobody thinks he's qualified with a quarterback he doesn't want. I just think, ultimately, Cecil, second-round pick from the Giants, Redskins, Patriots, or Chargers, and he's gone, and he goes, and they trade him on draft day.
Right. I can see that happening. The dirty little secret in the NFL is it's all about fit, and the God's honest truth is Josh Rosen doesn't fit what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. Kyler Murray does. Next in four-down territory.
fourth down.
My mindset is continue to prove to the people in this locker room and in this building that they got the right guy. And not only I'm saying right guy, because yes, I can go out there and break an 80-yard touchdown. I heard a little guy. Yes, there's a lot of people in the league that can do that. But as a guy who's going to buy in and get other people to buy in and take that leadership role, and I think that I've been able to show that so far, and I believe that I could take that to a whole nother level also.
There is Saquon Barkley talking in a phone booth. By the way, he could make you miss in that phone booth. But Barkley wanted to prove that he's the guy and saying that, you know, all the people that wanted the Giants to take a quarterback last year at number two overall, he's never going to change their mind anyway. He's rookie of the year. He's not going to change their mind. And the doubters, if we rewind a year ago, Troy, do you remember how many people were like, Saquon Barkley, he didn't have a bunch of 100-yard games? Like, I could tell the people that watch football compared to the people that don't watch football and, like, process it and understand it. When there were so many people doubting Saquon Barkley, I think last year what he showed is just the tip of the iceberg, and he's ready to prove more.
It's interesting because Barkley had a fantastic season and one of the all-time great rookie seasons, especially if you play fantasy football, right? I mean, guy's catching a million passes. He was kind of like a Le'Veon Bell, a young version of Le'Veon Bell, given how they used him in that offense.
Right.
It's still the irony is that no matter how well he played, if Sam Darnold becomes a star with the Jets, everyone's going to think, you know, Giants, you made a mistake not getting a quarterback. Because, and that's what DMAC talks about sometimes ad nauseum, but the value of quarterback, a good quarterback's worth more to a team than a great running back. That's just the way that's, you know, the CEO of a company, a great CEO is better than, you know, the guy who's taking the phone calls in the back room. That guy could be great. He's never going to be as valuable because of his role. And in the case of Saquon Barkley, that's, if it weren't for the Eli Manning hanging, the specter of Eli Manning hanging over, I would love Barkley. But it's, you watch Eli and you listen to Gettleman and you're like, what are you guys talking about 2 and 3 more years? Are you talking about 2 or 3 more days? Like, he's clearly on the other side of his career.
Right.
And so that's the shadow in which Barkley's starring, Cecil. In that city, it's him versus Darnold. He and Darnold. And if Darnold flames out, everyone's going to see, we got Barkley. He's our star for 10 years. If Darnold becomes a star, it's really not going to matter what Barkley does because everyone's going to say they should have had their quarterback. But Barkley's a hell of a player, and he is only going to get better. But for him to help them win as a running back, they got to get better at quarterback. I mean, they do, and that's one of those teams we got to keep an eye on because the Giants' interest in quarterback could directly influence what the Broncos would do in terms of a trade at 10.
I think the Giants and the Broncos, if you pick trade partners at 10, right? Who would be that best team? We're going to tell you in a little bit. Make sure to go see Stokely and Zach broadcasting live at Blake Street Tavern from 12 to 3 today. Enjoy some lunch and register to win some prizes courtesy of Blake Street Tavern. That's our guys Stokely and Z broadcasting noon to 3 live at Blake Street Tavern today. So, who would be the best fit for the Denver Broncos at 10, and which trade partner could be emerging for the Broncos? Is it up or down? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Well, the Broncos are going to trade in the first round of the 2019 NFL Draft. Look at the Magic 8-Ball, and it might say chances are likely they would do that, that they would execute a trade in the first round. First and foremost, Troy Rank and Cecil Lammy sitting in for Schlereth and Evans today. Troy, I think we need to get it out the way. Devin White's not going to be there. Okay, my first mock draft had Devin White. Everybody loved it. Terrell Davis even, like, retweeted it or whatever. But, like, yeah, everyone loves that. It's not going to happen. Stop. And if it's not Tampa Bay, it's going to be somebody else. I just have it on good authority that Devin White will go before the Broncos pick. So let's eliminate that from the options. TJ Hawkinson sounds nice, look pretty good, Broncos uniform, Joe Flacco and the success with the tight ends, that'd be really cool. But if you're sitting there at 10, and Daniel Jones is on the board, Dwayne Haskins is on the board, and Drew Lock is on the board, your phone's going to be ringing at the Valley. Do you think a team like the Dolphins, or the Redskins, or the Giants, at 13, 15, and 17 respectively, will be calling the Denver Broncos? Could the Denver Broncos take somebody's, I think the Giants have 37, you know, so they have a high second rounder. Could the Broncos move back in this draft? Is that becoming perhaps more likely now, Troy?
They have to be prepared for that. And they put themselves in position this year by interviewing all these quarterbacks and showing interest that they would take one. You know, instead of, ah, we're not taking, we got Flacco, we're good. No, they've done the due diligence. They've shown that if one's available, they very likely could take one, even though here locally we don't believe that would happen. It only matters that the other teams behind you think you will take a quarterback. You create the perception that you'll take a quarterback. So absolutely, with the Giants, Dolphins, and Redskins, there's going to be potential for trade. And they nearly did it last year, we saw, with the Bills. They were prepared to trade with the Bills until Chubb fell in their lap when they thought, you know, Chubb was going to go to the Browns and they weren't going to take Ward, Denzel Ward at five, who ended up having a terrific rookie year.
Right.
They were prepared to trade back. So I do think that's in play. But I'm not trading back further than 17. Because once you get out of the top, I don't even like 17. I would prefer it be 13, 15.
Okay.
Because once you get to 17, you start getting into that greasy area of guys who are going to come in, start first day, for me. Once you get out of the 15, top 15, gets a little greasy. That, man, is this guy really, was he really a late first rounder? We kind of took him in the mid. But they're going to have trade partners available. If you predict, Cecil, that those three quarterbacks, Drew Lock, Dwayne Haskins, and Daniel Jones are on the board.
Yeah.
I can't imagine someone trading for Jones just athletically. That seems like a reach to me at 10. Now, Locke and Haskins, that's not a reach based on all the mock drafts. That if they were there at 10, you could definitely see someone trading up for them. But if you're the Broncos, so you would trade out of 10 to, let's say, for argument's sake here, with the Giants at 17, and then you pick up their second rounder.
That'd be pretty good.
Yeah, for
get
a team,
that high second rounder.
For a team that has multiple needs,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Broncos. Meaning, so then you would argue.
You could get three starters. You get a starter at 17, a starter at 37, and a starter at 41.
Yeah, I would.
You could get three starters in this draft.
One of those would be, for me, a tight end of those three picks.
Okay.
And maybe it has to be Noah Fant.
It won't be Hockenson. It would have to be Noah Fant or Irv Smith.
Yeah.
Do you want a blocker, all-around guy like Irv Smith, or do you want a pure receiving threat like Noah Fant?
Well, they've never drafted an Alabama player under John Elway, so I would say the chances of Irv Smith, if you're going to Vegas, I would say no on that. I mean, hey, maybe this is the year, but John Elway's never drafted an Alabama player.
Right.
I think the last Alabama player that was a star in Denver was Bobby Humphrey, the running back. His son's now in the league, right? So
right. It's
been a while. But Fant, you know, he's more of a receiving tight end. They seem like they want a more versatile guy, but he would be there, I would think, at 15 or 17 if you traded back. You know, would a guy like Devin Bush fall to 15 or 17?
Maybe.
He's right at the number. Or
maybe.
Do you say, you know what? We know we've addressed corner this offseason, but man, we didn't think Byron Murphy would be there.
What does that say for Chris Harris if they go corner?
If they go corner in the first, that's the end of Harris, and I would not like that.
I would hate that.
Because they're not better this year without Chris Harris. Any defense he's on, he makes better. And I don't want to hear they got Bryce Callahan and Kareem Jackson. I like it. They're not Chris Harris. Chris Harris is still a star in this league, and he's one of the few guys who can play inside outside as a corner. But yeah, we take this through. You know, if a DK Metcalf or receiver is on the board, like they would have interesting options for me. I would have trouble trading out of 10. Because 10 for me, you should be able to get a surefire, day one starter, contributor, guy who's going to be on the field. You start trading back, then you're getting into that, oh, he's going to need a little seasoning. Oh, he's.
Devin Bush should be there at 17, depending on Cincinnati. Cincinnati at 11, who have been connected to quarterbacks. Andy Dalton doesn't have any guaranteed money left on his deal.
Right.
And 2 years left, top of my head. So, like, Cincinnati at 11, they could go Devin Bush. And if they don't, Bush could be there at 17. Is that too much of a gamble, though? Is that too far back? Based on this year's draft, from my personal opinion, there's about 16 actual first-round graded players. Half of this first round will be full of players that are not true first-round graded talent. 17, you're right on that line. Now, a couple quarterbacks are going to push that talent back. Maybe that is a Devin Bush, who I do see as a first-round talent. But you're not going to get as much if you go to 13. You're not going to get as much if you go to 15. If you can go to 17 and get that high second-rounder, it's going to be awful tempting. Awful tempting. for the Broncos.
Well, it's great for the second rounder because you're getting value there. The problem is, you just mentioned, are you getting a guy at 17 you like? Because that's right around the range they got Bowles. Bowles has been mixed bag so far. And that's just being, that's being probably generous that it's been a mixed bag.
He sucks.
No, he doesn't that. But he's been disappointing because of the penalties and the lack of progress in the passing game. And if he doesn't figure it out under Mike Munchak, it's hard for me to see them picking up his fifth-year option.
But do they go tackle at 17?
Well, it's just, is Andre Dillard there from Washington State?
Maybe.
The kid helped.
Jonah Williams.
That's
an Alabama guy. Dalton Reisner an option? Because Dalton Reisner at 10 is too high.
Yeah,
at 17, it's more apropos. Dalton Reisner should go off the board in the 20s. I've mocked him usually to Seattle in that range, you know, at 22, whatever the number is. Like,
well, you can't take him at
17. 17. Dalton Reisner, tackle or guard. I think he's the right tackle, but he can play guard.
Well, the thing about Munchak is he always goes outside in. They draft tackles, and then he moves them in if he needs to.
Right.
So that's why I don't see him taking a true center in this draft.
Garrett Bradbury.
Yeah, I don't see him taking Bradbury. I don't see him taking a center or guard, per se. I see them taking a tackle that, if it doesn't work at tackle, could move inside. Because that is the history of Mike Munchak.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the way he's done his lines, he finds guys, gets athletes, and he kind of just makes it work.
And the Steelers have one of the best offensive lines in the league. For years, the Steelers had trash, absolute garbage on the offensive line. And then what's funny is with Bell, Brown, and Ben and a great offensive line, they win no Super Bowls. That's why it's pathetic what the Steelers have done recently. But Mike Munchak built that line. I know everyone's in Broncos country here, but go back not that long ago, and the Steelers had a trash offensive line. Now, they won a couple Super Bowls with said trash, but Munchak changed that. Munchak gave them a really good offensive line.
And not with a bunch of high-round picks either.
No.
I mean, that's the thing that's encouraging about Munchak. It wasn't like, hey, he got two first-rounders, and yeah, anyone could have figured. No, he was taking projects and turning them into players.
Like
and
a tight end from Army, who's now one of the best left tackles in the league. And
yeah.
Villanueva.
Exactly. So my point is, if they do take offensive linemen, I think based on Munchak's history, both in Tennessee and Pittsburgh, Cecil, I would see them going outside in, where it'd be a tackle that, if it didn't work, could play guard. I don't see him taking a true center or guard.
Do you move to 17 if I can tell you today Devin Bush will be there at 17? Yes or no?
Yes, I would do that.
Do you move back to 17 if I can tell you today Dalton Reisner will be there at 17?
No.
How about new?
I don't do it for Reisner. And I like him. He's a local kid. I would. That's not at 17 there. Not at 17 there.
Okay.
I would like to get him at the end of the first round, like where you're trading back fifth-year option.
Well, if you've got 37 and 41,
you could trade up.
Mel Kiper's three-round mock draft had Reisner to the Broncos at 41. I don't think he's there. Maybe if you have 37, he might be there. Or maybe you could package 37, 41 and move up to 32 or whatever and grab him there.
Yeah, I don't like Reisner at 17. I like him. Don't misunderstand me, but I don't like him at 17. I don't like it. Now, Devin Bush, the difference between Devin Bush and Devin White for me is Devin White has a chance to be an all-pro. His upside, his ceiling is all-pro because his athleticism is just so unique.
Devin Bush is more ready now.
Devin Bush is more ready now, but his ceiling for me is pro bowler.
Yeah, that's where, and he's there.
Like, good player.
He's at a ceiling.
Played for Harbaugh at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Would understand this. It would be more of a seamless transition where White was a converted running back, and there's times he still plays like an athlete. But you see the athleticism, and it is just breathtaking. Where his upside for me is all pro, where Bush is Pro Bowl, and he doesn't have his highest ceiling, but there's still real value in that.
Was it a damning statement when Vic Fangio said neither one of Devin White or Devin Bush was Roquan Smith? Which he's right, by the way, but was it a damning statement?
It was interesting that he was that honest. And I don't know if you graded Roquan that much higher than White.
Yes.
Because you just felt he's more polished?
Yes.
Yeah, because athletically they're similar.
And Roquan is, like, ferocious.
Yeah, he's mean.
White's an athlete.
Yeah,
But do you have that mean streak? Like, Roquan is mean.
He plays
He's
mean.
Terrifying.
He plays mean.
I love him.
No doubt. And he played mean. Devin Bush would be the curious one at 17 if he's there. If you tell me I could trade back to 17, pick up the 37th pick in the second round and still get Devin Bush, if I'm the Broncos, that's a very intriguing scenario because I'm getting a starter in Devin Bush at 17. And then I'm adding, I should get two guys in the second round who start. Now I'm adding three starters for a team that went 6-10. Now we're, okay, now we're talking about something. That class with last year's class, we have a young core, new coaching staff. Now you start seeing, okay, the picture, the Kodak picture, the data is starting to develop and starting to crystallize here. You can't, those guys, those first, if you end up with, for me, the first, second, third rounders all need to start next year.
Yes.
First day starters.
Yep. Now, at 17, let's say they move back, and I'll be in Nashville next week, of course, broadcasting for you live during the entire draft. Super excited. And when I'm sitting there at 10, I don't think the Broncos are going to pick. I think they're going to move back. Now, that's a week away. We'll see if that changes. But you mentioned Noah Fant. I'm super excited about Noah Fant. Excitable when it comes to football. I love his receiving ability. He's plays like a supersized wide receiver. He's dangerous with the ball in his hands. And again, I have to be very careful with the way I say this, but I was told, like, yeah, teams are going to have to look in his background. That's it. I don't know anything about it. There's very little online. There was a gun incident in Omaha where someone pulled a gun on him at a park. And I was told, like, he had a really rough upbringing in Omaha. Teams are going to have to look in the background. Okay. If there are some sort of red flags there, is that something John Elway would be comfortable go ahead and picking? At 17, moving back and still getting your tight end, even though he's an F. And John Elway told me years ago before Jake Butt's class, like,
you know this. See, so the fact is you got a Y and you got an F.
That's my ringtone. I love that. John Elway said my name.
You've lost your mind.
Would you take maybe some character flags? Maybe they're not there, but would you take that if you're John Elway based on last year's class?
Well, again, character issues don't dissuade teams from drafting guys. What dissuades them from drafting guys if they're stupid players and they can't figure it out and get on the field. I mean, you can justify character concerns. Having said that, last year they went clearly, their philosophy changed last year. An abrupt U-turn away from showcase guys, athlete guys, combine guys to fourth, fifth-year captains. Every guy they drafted last year was a captain except one, and Yadam had leadership skills.
Right.
And Philip Lindsay, they're none. You know, we conclude him as part of the class, not the draft class, but certainly the rookie class. He was a captain. That was by design, and I was told they took players with red flags off their board. Red flags, though, there's some ambiguity. Is it red flags that they're not good on the whiteboard and they have no football IQ, or is it red flags like, hey, they could end up suspended by their second season? And that's a risk at that early pick. You can't, that financially, it puts you in a cramp. So, again, you have to do your homework in those cases. They did shift, Cecil. They did shift, and I think they should stay in that direction of guys who have shown, demonstrated high football IQ, who played a lot and either were captains or showed leadership ability, because that was a very successful plan last season.